Hello and welcome to All Villa No Filler, a podcast all about Aston Villa, the world's greatest football team. Villa fought back against those West Ham pretenders in claret and blue to draw 1-1. More on that in a sec. Plus, later, Frankie cooks up another of his spicy questions. But first things first, Frankie, how are you? Once again, Frankie, at the game today.
Oh, I've had an absolutely electric week. Thursday night, went to Villa Ajax, and it honestly one of my favourite ever nights at Villa Park. Battering a massive name like Ajax 4-0. I know they're not the team involved, but still, come on. You know, 5 years ago, they were 1 minute away from a Champions League final, and we were 1 minute away from losing at Rotherham away, you know, and here we are. We just went and absolutely battered them. Got to hang out with some fantastic people, Luis Miguel Echegaray, you know, a well-loved Aston Villa fan, his partner Jen, and Sam Tye, another regular guest on here. Just brilliant. And then on that night as well, a few people, George, who came up to me and said, are you from the All Villa No Filler podcast?
Frankie.
People are actually listening and watching this podcast. Can you believe it, George?
Incredible. Incredible. Yeah. Who thought? Who knew? Who? People care about what I think, and particularly people care about what you think, Frankie. Nobody cares what you think.
So I got, yeah. My own parents are like, they cut me off.
Shut up, Frankie. Shut up.
We'll talk about something else. Yeah. That's why my whole life has been like that. My girlfriend's the same. Just shut up, mate. Just go in the other room, mate. But it was amazing to, you know, just chat to people who clearly have such a love for Villa like we do. And I was in Wetherspoons near New Street Station, and someone came up, and his name was Jason Sterndale. He's from Sheldon. Give him a shout out. He came up to me and chatted all about Aston Villa for a good 15, 20 minutes, which was just great fun. It was
love
great.
It.
And then, another lad in Wetherspoon as well chatted to me, and then went to Villa Park, and a lad called Tomo as well, who was like All Villa No Filler like it. So yeah, just amazing. And so that, you know, just to have such a brilliant experience of a game, and to have people who, you know, say such nice things about the podcast, which it was perfect. And yeah, 3 days later I go to West Ham away, and I thought, you know, George, I thought, oh, this game's gonna get away from us. But second half I thought, there's a goal coming here, and we got it. So, you know, it's been a good few days. We got a great win against Ajax, and we got a very solid draw against seventh in the Premier League away from home.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, that's got to be a good result, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, given our record against West Ham in recent years as well, they've always been a tricky, tricky opponent. Like Fulham with Spurs yesterday. Fulham, they're sort of this underestimated, underrated side that, you know, you look at them in the table, they're sort of mid-table, and you know, you make the mistake of falling into the trap of thinking, well, they haven't got much to play for, or they're not a top side, but they've got some very good players in their ranks, as do West Ham. I mean, West Ham, they did away with Freiburg 5-0 earlier this week in a European competition more elite than the eliteness of the Conference League, so which they won last year, of course. So, you know, they are a very good side with very good players, and on their day they can hurt anyone, can't they? So, to get a point on the road against West Ham was really, really good. I think particularly given how we performed in spells. I think, you know, the first half in particular, we just didn't really seem to find any fluidity whatsoever. And to be fair to West Ham and their players, they really got at us. They hemmed us inside our own, you know, our own box, basically, for much of the first half. We really struggled to find an outlet. Sloppy balls, you know, panic stations, corners conceded, all the rest of it in the first half, which was a real challenge. But I think the substitutions, Frankie, I don't know how you feel about this, but bringing on Cash, who I think was unlucky not to start given his performance against Ajax, came on, and he made a real difference. I know we'll probably talk about that block right at the very end from him. Another block. He did it against Ajax. He did it again today against West Ham. Fantastic from him. And Zaniolo, fantastic to see him score the goal, and Diaby to set it up. So the substitutions really made a difference, didn't they?
Yeah, it was very interesting when I saw the starting lineup. I was in a pub in it's quite funny with West Ham, because you think of West Ham as being like, you know, like East End, you know, the Cray twins, like, you know, a bit of this, bit of that. EastEnders, Cat Slater saying, "You're not my mum, I am your mum." But it's not like that anymore. It's actually hipster central. Hackney Wick near West Ham Stadium is pure hipster central. And their stadium is like hilarious in the sense of just how far away you are from the pitch. No wonder every West Ham friend I have is always like, I bloody can't stand our stadium, mate. I can't stand it. And yeah, it's you are a long way from the pitch, but look, when you're with the away fans, it's a brilliant feeling. I'm delighted that's not our stadium. But when you're with the away fans, it just makes it just the atmosphere just solves it for you, doesn't it?
Yeah,
while I was like, the distance between here and the planet of Mars from the pitch, it was good fun. And the starting lineup, I thought Unai Emery had gone attacking. I thought he thought, right, well, McGinn's out, we might not have the defensive solidity to just kind of withstand a kind of onslaught from West Ham. So, do you know what? Let's just go at them instead, which I think was understandable. And I think the reason he picked Duran was because of how well Duran had played on Thursday night, and he'd been such a menace against Ajax's defence. And, you know, I think that was a fair enough shout, but I think the problem today was that when we were dominating the ball largely in the first half, but we were doing nothing with it. So West Ham were creating more chances because they would win it back, and then they'd just do a 1-2, cross it in the area, and, you know, Mikel Antonio scores a goal, for instance. But for me, I thought what was happening a lot of the time was that we'd retain it, and then we'd look forward, and there'd be this massive gap where West Ham would press forward, our midfield would come deep to get the ball, and then you'd have Watkins and Duran just standing miles away up by the halfway line. This huge gap where somebody could run into and collect the ball to link up play. But instead, Duran and Watkins were doing the same thing. They were both waiting for the ball up front, which was, you know, that's just a shame because obviously I get it why Emery played them together, but, you know, because they've not played together that often this season, but it just didn't quite work, you know. And I think that at halftime, when Diaby came on, that link up in between midfield and up front that had not been there in the first half, suddenly it was there. And I thought Diaby was fantastic. I think he made a massive difference. I think Clément Longley in the first half, for whatever reason, I think Longley's been playing well recently, but in the first half, he could not pass that ball to save his life. On at least three or four occasions, he gave the ball away. And eventually, on about the fourth occasion, he gave the ball away. It's what led to the play that led to West Ham scoring their goal. Longley did not have a good game, which, you know, again, Emery's working with what he's got. He's working with what with all the injuries he's seeing, what works and what doesn't. Tonight, it just didn't work for Longley, and it didn't work for Duran. But no, Diaby, Cash, those substitutions in the second half made all the difference. And I thought Diaby and Bailey, once again, as they have done on a few occasions this season, have such a fantastic understanding. And in fairness to Cash, I thought he had a really good work. I think he worked well with them again as well today. And it got to such a point that West Ham eventually brought on Ben Johnson to just deal with, brought Antonio off to bring Johnson on to deal with Bailey. That's how good Bailey was playing. And yes, I think second half, the goal's coming all half. Zaniolo gets it. And again, fair play to Zaniolo. You know, we've been critical of him recently in the sense, like, I feel like centrally he's not been working very well, whereas I think out wide he's been playing a lot better when he's had that opportunity. I think today, you know, he was out on the left, so he was a little bit wider. But I thought today he looked so much better. You know, he was so confident. The decisions he was making were good. He wasn't dithering on the ball. He was making quick passes. Obviously, he made like a, you know, one or two silly things where he threw the ball away. Could have been a red, you know, bit immature, bit silly, but brilliant goal. Good from him. And I think his all-round play was very good today. So, yes, I think the substitutions made the big difference. But, George, do you think we could have won that? Do you think that was a game there to be won?
There were certainly opportunities in the second half. I think, obviously, once you score a goal, the momentum shifts and it's with you, and there's an opportunity then to try and capitalize on that. I think on the balance of play, if I'm going to be fair, I think a point was a fair result for both sides. It was a kind of classic cliche of a game of two halves where, you know, West Ham deserved to be ahead in the first half, and we did well in the second period as well, enough to get a point. And it was a really good goal from Zaniolo, definitely, as you say.
And a brilliant ball from Tielemans and a brilliant run from Diaby. It was a great goal all around that.
It was. Yeah, look at that great build up to that one. And then, you know, West Ham might be aggrieved because they had a couple of goals themselves ruled out. I think the one that we need to talk about is obviously the essentially, you know, one of the final kicks of the game where the ball comes in, another set piece that we sort of struggled to deal with.
Yeah.
And then, as far as I'm concerned, because I watched it back a couple of times now, as clear as day, Suchek handles the ball. The ball hits his arm and goes into the back of the net.
Blatantly.
Yeah. And you know, he can protest all he likes, but it's there in black and white, isn't it? You can see it. It hits his arm and goes in. But the frustration, you know, we were talking before we started recording this podcast, the frustration amongst West Ham fans certainly, but also Villa fans and football fans generally about VAR is when you watch that back and you see that, you see the ball hit his arm, how long it takes for that to be ruled out. I just find it astonishing. And I appreciate they want to be careful. They want to make sure that it's the right decision. And I suppose, you know, they can't win either way. In some ways, you sort of feel a little bit for the refs. But it was clear and it was obvious. So why was the delay there? I don't know.
And why did they need to send him to the screen to watch it?
Like,
I watched it once after the game, and I thought, well, that's blatantly a handball. Why was that a difficult decision? And then in the stands, you know, bearing in mind this went on for like 5 minutes, was a lad next to me who had Twitter, and he said he saw the handball. He went, oh, it's definitely a handball. Don't worry, it's fine. And I was like, well, this lad next to me has come to this decision within 1 minute or 2 minutes. Bugmoller sat there, you know, probably, you know, cracking open a can of Pinot Noir, you know, you know, having a little wine tasting competition. And then they go, oh, mate. Look, I mean, obviously, I think as a podcast, I think we're very fair on referees. That we don't really go after referees on this podcast. We just don't, because I think, you know, there's a big danger that, you know, it leads to a kind of, firstly, conspiracy theories.
Yeah, massively. Yeah.
But also, secondly, it also leads to kind of a culture of, you know, abuse. And, you know, we've got to be very careful of that and mindful of the fact that there's a lot of referees who want to come into the game and, you know, they don't want to do it because there's a general culture that they're going to get abused. And I don't think we want to encourage that. But I think the point that you could make is that very clearly, you know, tonight you're like, why has it taken so long to make that decision? Like, he didn't need five. It was clearly a handball. So why have you taken 6-7 minutes for it? And I think that's what leads to so much frustration about VAR and refereeing in general. But also, you know, the Antonio handball earlier as well. I've not actually seen the replay of that. But like I say, like, because I'm at the opposite end of the stadium, you're so far away. It's like you need bloody the James Webb telescope to see what's going on down the other end. You know, it can look into other dimensions, that bloody telescope. You know, you need it to see that. But
So was Saniola's goal towards your end?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, thank God. Yeah. I just about saw it. It was still quite far away. But
were you high up in sort of the stand above the home fans? Because Saniola was doing this, I thought,
did it towards
the Villa fans, was he?
Interesting. I've seen the replay of that, and it was definitely aimed at the Villa fans. So
really?
He must have listened to the Your Villa No Filler podcast when 1 week I went, he's not a central player, he's a wide player. And he clearly listened and he went,
Know your role,
shut your mouth. And I'm like, yeah, all right, I'll know where I'll shut my mouth if you're scoring goals like that, mate.
Interesting. We've got another Alpi on our hands. Interesting, isn't it? I suppose he must be aware of the criticism, which I think is in many ways largely unfair. There's been some talk about him struggling with you know, adapting to the Premier League, obviously, which can be hard for any player. We've seen reports of the Italian manager getting in touch with the club and asking why he hasn't played as many minutes as he was hoping he would play. And maybe that's a frustration for Zaniolo as well. But I think he's still got a part to play, Frankie. I really do. I think particularly with suspensions to McGinn and injuries, and we're sort of creaking towards the end of the season where, you know, we are going to have to rotate up our you know, starting 11 a bit more than maybe we might want to.
Yeah.
But he's certainly got a part to play.
Well, think about it. You know, he's the Sheffield United game where we couldn't score for 97 minutes. He got the goal there.
Big goals. Yeah.
Today, you know, it was a fantastic run from deep that he made, and the West Ham defence just didn't pick him up. And Diaby did really well to put it across for him. And again, you know, those 2 points at the end of the season could be really crucial. And, you know, in the past that could have led to, you know, it could have been two losses. So, yeah, but also first half, again, whilst I was at the opposite end of the stadium and it was very hard to see, in the first half, it looked to me like there was a very blatant handball where Bailey tried to cross it, hit the West Ham player on the hand. And was that a handball? Am I dreaming it? Or
I think it did look like one to me. But again, it goes back to the inconsistencies of VAR, isn't it? Why are they taking forever over some things and seemingly not bothering to check others? But yeah, no, absolutely. When I watched that back, I thought that absolutely could have been given as a handball. So yeah, it's frustrating. But as I said, I do think a point is a brilliant result, really.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And to get that sort of late equaliser, you know, there might be some Villa fans frustrated that we didn't push on and get a winner. But you know, I think it's a bit of a, you know, you take what you can. You know, it's another point on the board, and you move on to another really difficult game against Wolves at home.
I mean that was the thing. I think, like, you know, if you think of Villa in the past, you know, all right, we had a horrendous result against Spurs. How often do Villa teams in the past bounce back from results like that and just go and do what we've just done?
You know, we
lose 4-0 at home to Spurs, and then we go and beat Ajax, bloody Ajax, 4-0 at home on a big European night. And then we go and get a 1-1 draw at one, you know, a very difficult place to go away, where we for the last 10, 11 years, haven't won.
Yeah.
We went there, we went 1-0 down. But instead of caving in, we go and get results. Like, this team has such a character. And we, you know, we're missing McGinn, we're missing Kamara, we're missing Buendia, Mings, so many key players we're missing. And we still find a way of doing it. It's, you know, the credit you have to give to this team to sort of their ability to just go to a level and find something to get a result. Mm-hmm. That's very, very un-the Villa that we have known for a long time. That has to be Unai Emery. It has to be. But also, it's got to be on the players reacting to whatever it is that Unai Emery's coaching staff are telling them to do. Mm-hmm. And I thought second half, I think massive credit to, you know, Zaniolo coming on, obviously. But Diaby made a massive difference, just coming deep, being that link-up player. Matty Cash, I thought, you know, really did well. And Leon Bailey, I thought Bailey was just, again, unstoppable. Mm. And, you know, the fact West Ham had to bring a player on to stop him says it all, doesn't it? Bailey genuinely looks like one of the most electric football players on the planet. He is just unbelievable.
Yeah, no, he looks very good. He's really... he's come on leaps and bounds this season, hasn't he? Before we move on to the spicy question, Frankie, because you're cooking. You, I know, I can smell it. It's sizzling away in the background.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I've thrown the onions on.
Sliced up a couple of jalapeno peppers and chuck that in. We need to talk about the Conference League draw. Obviously, we've got Lille in the quarterfinals, and if we get through that stage, we've got either Olympiacos or Fenerbahce. Tricky places to go in the semi-finals, which is, looking at the teams remaining in the competition, I would say is one of the toughest draws you could have picked.
Do you agree
with that?
Yeah, because I think Olympiacos, Fenerbahce and Lille have a lot more recent European experience than Aston Villa do. You know, it's worth remembering that, you know, European experience. Take Arsenal against Porto. I bet you in the Premier League, Arsenal probably beat Porto relatively, you know, 2-0, go away to Porto, probably win, you know, 2-1, something like that. In the Champions League, it's different. There's just something about those European fixtures. Teams you're not familiar with, fans you're not familiar with, away days you're not familiar with, the travel, that everything about it. It's a different thing, and it does take a lot of getting used to. And, you know, this season is a fantastic experience for us to get used to that again. You know, like Ajax away, for instance, that's the kind of game in Europe we've not played for a very, very long time. Lille are doing well in Ligue 1. They're a very good side. They've got some top players. Jonathan David obviously sticks out, the Canadian striker. But at the same time, I still back this Villa team to do something. And I still think Unai Emery is the manager you would want in this kind of scenario. What I would say is if we get through that, Olympiacos away or Fenerbahce away, that's going to be, you know, again,
as a second leg as well, Frankie.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't help us that both games are second legs, like the semi-finals or the quarterfinals. But again, that's what you got to deal with. And I think Fenerbahce, I spent a lot of time in Istanbul a few years ago, and it's honestly probably my favorite city in the world. But what I would say is that I was there on the day of Fenerbahce versus Galatasaray. And
was Sunes there?
Yeah.
With his flag.
Planting the flag in the middle of the Hagia Sophia or something. Yeah, it was... I mean, honestly, Istanbul's the most beautiful city. It's fantastic and just incredible. But yeah, on that match day, it was it was different. I was sat in a pub. I was probably in a more Galatasaray area. I think Fenerbahce is on the Asian side of Istanbul. Mm-hmm. I was on the European side, where I think Galatasaray are. I was very much close to Besiktas. That was like my local team, I guess. And I remember looking out a window in a pub, and Galatasaray fans surrounding cars and just pushing them back and forth. And I thought, bloody hell, I'm trying to imagine my mom driving back from her grocery shopping and a bunch of Galatasaray fans just surrounding it. And it'd be like Blues fans in Birmingham, like celebrating winning the Autoglass windscreen shield or something, pushing the car back and forth, which they might have to do soon because, you know, I think they're going down, George.
Yeah, possibly. We won't go there though, Frankie. We won't sully this podcast, of course. Yeah.
Our rival podcast, No Blues, You Lose, or something like that. all Blues, We Lose.
All Blues, We Lose, yeah. Don't tune into them, you know. You don't want to hear that. Well, it'll be interesting. Of course, Saniolo played for Galatasaray, didn't he, last season? If we do face Fenerbahce, then that's added impetus for him to... you know, get one over the old Istanbul rivals. But yeah, it'll be exciting. As you say, Frankie, you can only play who you're drawn against. And if we want to win this competition, we have to beat the best teams in it. And I think the ones remaining are the best teams in it, because that's why they're there. And we do go in as favourites. And also, as you say, Frankie, even though we as a club don't have much European experience, I think this is the first time we've been in a European Cup quarterfinal since 1998. Yeah. You know, the players that play for this club, a lot of them do. You know, Leon Bailey's played there, Diaby's played there, Zaniola's played in Europe.
Martinez has won a World Cup.
Absolutely. So, Matty Cash has played for Poland at a World Cup. So, you know, we do have players that have played at, you know, in international level. So that doesn't worry me too much. I think the atmosphere is the thing that will be perhaps the disarming. Maybe
that's the thing to experience. I think that's something I'm quite keen for these players to get that experience, because who knows, we might be in Champions League next season. You never know.
You never know.
I mean, you know, you want that ahead of whatever comes in the future. And but George, as Ric Flair once said, to be the man, you gotta beat the man. Bring him on.
Woo!
All Villa No Filler on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram.
Welcome back, everybody. Now it is time for this.
The George and I have a long overdue fallout over this, the spicy question. And today, George, I ask you, would you accept winning the Conference League but not getting Champions League football?
Oh, Frankie, I tell you what, this is the spiciest question you've ever asked me in the, how many years have we done this podcast? Two years.
A bit of a
in 2 years, this
a sizzler. You're in the Balti Triangle in Birmingham. You've found the spiciest ingredients.
I'm in the Balti Triangle. I've disappeared. I'm in the Balti Triangle. Bermuda Triangle. This is next level spicy, Frankie. This is black bottle Nando sauce spicy.
Yeah.
Oh God.
Oh.
I'm thinking about it.
I know my answer.
Oh really? You know it straight off the bat.
Yeah.
I would say Champions League. Yeah, and I understand it's such a spicy question, Frankie, that I know that people listening in, if they've stuck with us this far, will strongly disagree with that. Because I understand like the passionate support of winning a trophy, which
some people have just thrown their phones in a river.
Like, yeah, I bet
they're on the way to work tomorrow on the Monday morning commute, threw the phone out the bus or something.
Yeah, no, I can completely, and I apologize. I'm sorry you have to go get a new handset, but like, I just think, you know, in terms of like the money, the prestige, and it's horrible to say. I think it's just the nature of modern football that the champions are, you know, in the past 50, I think perhaps the older listeners might say cup. I know I'm generalizing here, but maybe, but the fact of the matter is the money, the prestige is now, fortunately, whether you like it or not, all in the Champions League. And if we qualify, if we're lucky enough to qualify for the Champions League this season, that means a financial windfall, which means that we might be able to hang on to our better players and not risk selling some of our top quality players.
Yeah,
we'll have the prestige of being in the tournament, which means we can attract better players. So in terms of our kind of development and our growth as a football club, qualifying for the Champions League is much more beneficial. But I can totally get, on the other side of the coin, having that sort of tangible sort of item of success, which is lifting a physical trophy and having that written down in the annals of our history, and in the record books and bringing it home and all the rest of it. I completely get that. And I want both, Frankie. That's what I want. I want both. But if you're asking me, gun to my head, I am going to say Champions League.
I absolutely think Villa can do both. I definitely think we can, but I agree. I think if it was the Europa League, I'd be a little bit more. I think winning the Europa League would be such a massive thing. I think that'd be like a real, because it's hard to win that. And I think if you're winning that, you are
top side. Yeah,
yeah, top sides win that trophy, and I think that would be a massive thing if Villa won that. But Conference League, again, it would be massive for us.
And also, you'd qualify for the Champions League the following season.
Exactly.
That's a no-brainer. You do get both with that.
Yeah. I think Conference League would be, you know, it'd be unbelievable. And I think we can do both. But, yeah, if I had to choose between the two, I hate the way in football we have to talk about FFP and PSR and all the revenues. It's just so... It's like, why is football like this now? But... that's a different debate, I guess. That's definitely one big aspect of it. And you kind of think of the players you can attract, the players you might not need to sell, the things it does for your team as a sort of, you know, attractive place to go. But also, aside from all of the sort of annoying, horrible stuff that you cynically think about, you know, revenues wise and all that, it's more like, you know, you think of like, can you imagine if we went to Real Madrid away?
Oh God! Yeah,
you know what I mean. I know. Can you imagine like Real Madrid come to play at Villa, and you're playing, you know, Mbappe.
It would be booing Bellingham
off the pitch.
It would be mad, wouldn't it? You know, you hear the Champions League music, and the camera pans across, and you've got Bellingham and Mbappe, and then all of a sudden you've got Wee John McGinn.
Yeah.
You know, Tyrone Mings. It would be phenomenal.
And you think of where these two players have come from, McGinn and. Mings, given where they started with Villa, to think they would be in a situation like that.
Ludicrous, isn't it? Yeah, it
mad. Is and you know, Grealish back on loan, you know, something like that.
But
Bellingham getting booed off the pitch, but
yeah,
no, it's just the thought, you know, of playing that many games in the Champions League, that music playing there, playing against Barcelona, Real Madrid, away days in, you know, Bayern Munich, wherever. We'd probably get murdered on a couple of nights, like 3-0 or something, but at the same time there'd be a couple of nights where we'd win a few games, and maybe you never know, there'd be a big win at Villa Park against who knows, you know, top team. So I think it'd be a statement of Villa are here, this is where we can be, and this is who we are now, and you know, who knows where it could lead to from that. So I think I'd take Champions League over Conference League, but with the caveat that I think we can do both this season.
Yeah. And, you know, listeners, if you're still with us, those who spoke to Frankie at Villa Park, let us know your thoughts. What do you want? Because I do think, Frankie, as I said, this is the spiciest question you've asked.
A very spicy question.
And you know, if our listeners can handle the spice, please do get in touch and let us know your thoughts.
And please like, please subscribe on Spotify, Apple, wherever you get your podcasts. If you're on YouTube, follow us on there. All the good stuff. Just follow, subscribe, comment. Let us know your thoughts and everything so we can just keep building these relationships.
Absolutely. Good vibes only. And on that note, on those good vibes, Frankie, we depart. We say thank you, everybody, for listening. I have been your host, George Alinsky. Frankie, see you later.
Catch you a bit, George Alinsky. Up the mighty Villa.
Up the mighty Villa. And it is goodbye from me, too. We will, of course, be back again soon. But until then, come on, Super Aston Villa.